Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We're back on a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. It's Football Tuesday, but we have some other news and notes we got to talk about. Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. Vinny, last week we were talking about how much fun today's show would be based on all the free agent movement in the NFL. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been wild.
It's been crazy. This two-day, what do they call it, the tampering period? It's
legal tampering
period. Legal tampering period. It's incredible.
Incredible, yeah. I think you peg that.
Yeah, it's incredible.
There are some teams that I'm looking at contracts. Yeah, I guess my problem with the way following the latest collective bargaining agreement, I guess my biggest problem is you see a lot of teams overpay. And I understand you have to overpay in some aspect at a position of need. But at the same time, overpaying at multiple positions, it's a bad idea. And you typically, it takes you a couple of years to rebound from that.
Yeah, it really does. And I think the one part of the CBA that it's interesting is having to use all your space.
Yes.
And I don't like that rule.
I don't either.
Because it just forces you to, it really just drives the price up on players that don't deserve it. So you're going to have teams that have to spend money and you're just giving money away.
Worst contract so far.
Devin Funchess, $14 million.
And we're talking about the Colts, who had a ton of cap space. We thought maybe they would target Le'Veon. We thought maybe they'd get in the Antonio Brown sweepstakes.
Tyrell Williams is a perfect fit. You
and
know
they
the old
go
coaches.
Devin Funchess,
$14 million. Adam Humphries getting $10 million a year.
Not good.
I don't like that. I don't like that. And Mosley got overpaid.
Mosley did. And
he's a great player, but that's insanity money.
Well, it's record-breaking money from a linebacker spot.
That's incredible.
You know, and I get the idea here that, okay, Anthony Barr apparently was coming, right? Anthony Barr had agreed in principle to join the Jets, and then he flip-flopped on it. 5 years, $67 million he got from Minnesota, $33 million of that guaranteed, so I don't blame him. But dare I say I hate the Mosley deal more knowing that Barr isn't coming. I didn't mind it at first because if you're going to overpay, you can mask some of the deficiencies that Mosley has, right? If you put Anthony Barr next to him, because look, let's be real, Mosley, for as great as he is against the run, he's not great in pass coverage.
No, he's not great in pass coverage, and we don't really know what scheme that's going to be.
We don't.
We don't know, really.
Better cater towards C.J. Mosley.
Yeah, well, it has to now.
Yeah.
With that kind of money, you have got to centerpiece your entire defense around him. And he's got to earn a lot of money. He's got to make a lot of plays to earn that money. And you know, for us, we talked about this off the air too. But what about Baltimore?
Baltimore. We're going to talk about the Ravens a little bit later on in the show because this is the team in my mind that has been hit the hardest, and it spells complete. It's a complete rebuild.
It's what it looks like because they didn't have to go the route they did.
No, they didn't. And
the Raiders. That's just,
well, the Raiders are all in.
That's desperation. Desperation. That is, they had to generate something, so they went all in way more than they may have, way more than other people were going to go in. That's just going
to
say.
They still have roughly $45 million to play with. They still have a lot of money to play with.
Well, now
the
entire league
is what they have.
And well, now the entire league is saying, if you can afford all that, like even me and you, then why didn't you just give it to Khalil Mack?
Well, yeah. And
yeah, I get the first round pick, but
if Mike Mayock would have been there, maybe they would have.
Well, and then you last year, your first round pick and your third round pick are offensive tackles. And then you're going to give $17 million to an average tackle?
Yeah.
It's like you're just desperately throwing money around to generate excitement. That's what it really looks like to me.
You know,
I agree with the AB trade, though. I do like that for Oakland standpoint. Right. The first move they made, I agree with.
How can you not?
How do you not? A third and a fifth? It's a no-brainer. But especially saving $10 million bucks, shipping off Osemele. Mm-hmm. You save $10 million on that trade. So I get it with AB, but, you know, Joyner, I think they overpaid. Trent Brown, grossly overpaid. So what else do they do now? $45 million.
A lot of money. You got to go get Le'Veon. Go get Le'Veon.
They re-signed Hankins, which I thought was a good move.
Sure. I don't hate what the Raiders have done. I really don't. As a Raider fan, did you overpay for Trent Brown? Yeah, you did. But at the same time, you didn't give up anything to get AB. You're only giving him $30 million.
Yeah, that's right. The AB move was a home run.
And I talked about this yesterday. When you take a look at what Carr accomplished last season, completion percentage went way up. He threw 9 go routes all season last year. And 2 of them were picked. They didn't have a downfield threat.
They didn't have nothing.
They had nothing. Yeah, right?
Offensively, they had nothing.
So the best way to create time for Carr would be to bring in a competent left tackle. And I thought Brown was great last year for the Patriots. He really was. I mean, when you go back and you look at what happened to Tom Brady in the playoffs, he wasn't touched, if I remember correctly, throughout the first 2 games of the postseason. Chiefs didn't get to him. The Chargers didn't get to him.
And, you know, that's part of the scheme design. And I think Gruden will help with that, too, Carr is not going to hold the football like Brady. You know, that was the key to beating Brady last year, and most teams couldn't do it, was get him to his third receiver. So, yeah, it's just interesting. But, again, when your fan base is basically lame ducks, we've talked about this, you have no place to play.
Right.
You're moving to Vegas. You've got to do this. I agree with it at some point. You've got to generate excitement.
Did they overpay for LaMarcus Joyner?
Absolutely.
I say
absolutely. And you know this because you're...
I do.
Yeah, being a big Rams homer. He didn't play great last year at all.
No, he didn't. Look, Ram fans had enough of LaMarcus Joyner following the alligator arm attempt on the Drew Brees 50-50 ball that really could have ended their season in the NFC Championship when Brees hit the end down the field.
An easy pick.
Easy pick, and Joyner didn't come up with it. And, you know, you can't base an entire season off of one play, but when you go back and take a look, John Johnson outplayed LaMarcus Joyner hands down in the secondary. I mean, there was no question. And you gave me the perfect segue because today the Rams introduced Eric Weddle, and obviously in the state of Utah, there's a lot of passion towards Eric Weddle.
Absolutely.
You fans love Eric Weddle, and we actually have a clip. We'll play it right now. Eric Weddle excited to be in a Ram uniform.
I remember having a Rams full tackle uniform, like tackling the couches and stuff when I was a little kid. I didn't have any brothers, so my dad was getting the brunt of it. But it was cool just how it's come full circle for me. I've had an amazing run at this, and I think things happen for a reason, and to have an opportunity to finish out what I started in an amazing place like this, and next step is to go win the Super Bowl. I live my dream every day, so there's always will be a smile on my face, but obviously when things ended in Baltimore, I kind of got to reassess what the next step is, and being where my career is at, you know, people look at me, 34, man, I haven't hit my prime yet, so you guys get ready.
So, Vinny, when we take a look at the Weddle signing and also the Rams bringing back Dante Fowler, it looks like Ndamukong Suh is gone. We know LaMarcus Joyner is gone. And Roger Saffold's gone because he signed a 4-year, $44 million deal.
Mark Barron.
With Tennessee. Mark Barron is gone. Yep. And where the Rams are sitting right now, roughly $9 to $10 million, I believe, in cap space at the time of the show. Not a whole lot of... I mean, you're going to have to rely heavily on the draft, and guess what? They don't have a second-round draft pick. You're going to get a comp pick in the third round. You're going to pick at the end of the first round. Are the Rams in trouble, or have they done enough in your mind by going out and getting Weddle and Fowler?
Hey, I really like the Weddle and Fowler deal. I think a lot of the communication issues in the back end will be solved with Weddle. Weddle's a pro. So I think that'll help, especially in the coverage aspect of it. I think Fowler gave him... You've seen it when Fowler got comfortable in the playoffs. Fowler was quite a good football player.
He was.
He looked great in the playoffs. So you have something there. You still have Brockers. You still have Donald. You still have, you know, some guys. So, yeah, you're going to need a linebacker, hands down. You're going to have a linebacker. Ebukam. He's going to have to step up and play one side in that 34 defense. But Wade Phillips is a master creating pressure. So I like the Rams. You know, they're going to get some guys back. Cooper Kupp makes a huge difference.
Oh, no doubt.
Huge difference.
No doubt.
Reynolds stepped up, so now he moves from number 3 to number 4. So I really like that. You're a little thin in your interior offensive line, so you know you're going to have to spend some draft capital on the offensive line and at linebacker. But I like the Rams. I think they're in a nice position right now.
Now, you're not thrilled with the Chargers as far as free agency
goes. No, I did like the Denzel Perryman signing. These are my Chargers, my Bolts. But I was a little confused today with Thomas Davis. And really what I was confused with Thomas Davis is what's his role? Now, they may have a specific role. Anthony Lynn may have him in there as, hey, dude, I need a locker room leader, and I need you to play a certain position. And they needed help at linebacker. I just don't see where he fits when you have two young, up-and-coming Will linebackers in Jatavis Brown and Kaiser White. So what does Thomas Davis do?
Well, you're spending money for depth. There's no question. I think the Chargers are in a spot where they can do that.
They can do that. Yeah,
you know,
they can.
They're in a unique spot. I think when you take a look at the dollar amount and what's available for the Chargers, it's not as if they're pressed up against the cap.
No, so they have a little money.
You can spend on depth, and if we've learned anything over the past, I don't know, since this last CBA, depth's important, right?
Yeah, you're going to need second and third. But, you know, again, it's a good player. Thomas Davis can play.
Yeah, he can.
And he's a veteran leader, and he's a good guy.
You would have just rather have seen that money spent elsewhere.
Unless they have a specific role that, you know, of course they know and we don't, but, you know, maybe he plays Will linebacker and one of those guys moves. But for a veteran like that who doesn't play special teams, that's a lot of money if he's not going to be healthy and play a specific role. So I'm interested to see where it is, I guess, more than anything.
You got to spend money at wideout. Williams isn't coming back.
Tyrell Williams is not coming back.
Right, so you're going to have to figure out a way to replace him. I don't know, maybe you explore that in the draft.
Williams has to step up more.
Well, he has to, and to be honest with you, if you're a Charger guy, I would much rather fix this issue third, fourth round than pay Jamison Crowder the amount of money that the Jets are going to pay
him.
Oh, no,
yeah, and then these slot receivers, what do we see? Humphrey's got 10, Beasley got 9.
Beasley got 9, yeah.
Adam Humphrey's got 10 million a year?
He got 10.
That's incredible.
But to me, that's one of the glaring needs. When I take a look at this team offensively, it's a glaring need.
Well, and they got some young players that they kept on the roster last year, so they'll have to step up in the back end. Travis Benjamin will have to play.
Yeah.
So you're solid three deep. You need a fourth and fifth receiver. You got to figure that out. You're right. And maybe their last year's sixth round pick, Dylan Cantrell, is a big kid. They really like him, and he was coming on, and he hurt himself in the training camp. So if he comes on and he's your fourth receiver, then you need the back end of your roster. And receivers, you know, you can find them. Your fourth and fifth receivers, you should be able to build those guys.
Yeah, you don't want to spend $13 million on Devin Funchess, right?
No, you don't. Were you shocked about that one, too? I thought it was a typo. I thought I said four.
I was blown away.
I thought I said $4 million. I thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. And then I was like, whoa, that's not four, that's 14.
I got a text from one of my buddies that covers professional football out of the area, and he said, someone really likes Devin Funchess. Someone really likes this guy. But again, it goes back to what you were talking about in the CBA. You have to spend that money.
You got to spend that money.
And so
you have to do it. And who's to say Williams doesn't follow him?
It's possible. We said weeks ago that would be the ideal spot for him.
That was a perfect match for Tyrell Williams.
And then if you're T.Y. Hilton, you're in love, because not only have you fixed the offensive line, same thing with Andrew Luck. They have tried to fix the offensive line, and now you're going to add weapons around. One of the biggest problems I have had with Indianapolis over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, they haven't done enough to protect the asset of Andrew Luck. I don't
catapult
think they have.
Him, yeah. They haven't catapulted him.
We'll talk more NFL in just a bit. We do have other headlines. I don't know if you've seen the Utah Jazz saga last night with Russell Westbrook.
I'm not a basketball guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
So anyone that follows basketball in the NBA knows exactly what I'm going to talk about. Last night, Jazz Thunder, big game in the Western Conference. There is history with Russell Westbrook in the state of Utah. It's captured on a phone camera last night. Russell Westbrook stands up, threatens to bleep up an individual and his wife based on some of the stuff that they were saying to him.
So this is right behind him while he's on the bench.
So Westbrook, and this, I mean, we can't play the audio of what he's saying. Obviously, Jazz fan says he didn't say anything to him. There are witnesses around that say, oh no, he did say something to him. Well, the Utah Jazz took control of the situation today. They have now permanently banned the fan who had the exchange with Russell Westbrook last night, saying, quote, in a statement, there is no place in our game for personal attacks or disrespect. The NBA also took matters into their hands. They fined Russell Westbrook $25,000. Here's Russell Westbrook last night addressing the situation.
I take whatever, all the criticism from everybody. I've been doing the same thing for years. And for me, disrespect would not be taken from me. I'm completely just sit back some time and just take it like that's just one video. But throughout the whole game, throughout the whole, since I've been here, especially here in Utah, every time I come here, it's a lot of disrespectful things I said. And for me, I'm just not going to continue to take disrespect from my family.
Vinny, you and I have both been to multiple sporting events, to say the least. One of the things that stands out to me in the state of Utah, Jazz fans, look, I'm not saying all Jazz fans are like this, but they are rowdy. They are very rowdy, sometimes a little erratic, and sometimes they cross the line. You could ask 100 sports reporters who have been through Utah, and they will tell you the same thing. I remember interviewing Kobe Bryant 5 years ago, and he told me he looked forward to coming to Utah because he thrived on the hate that they would spew to him. But one of the things that I have said multiple times here on this show, and nobody can debate this, adult behavior at professional sporting arenas or stadiums is a disaster in this country. It's horrible.
It is. It's absolutely out of control.
It's almost embarrassing.
Yeah, it is. It's out of control. And Utah, and I've been to Game 5, elimination playoff games at the Jazz. And they, well, you know what? The truth is, for many years, and most people still feel this way, that's the only professional team in Utah. Now, we do have the soccer team now.
Yeah, it's the only professional team.
Yeah, so it's the only professional team. And there is a giant following. Utah, the state of Utah is big on basketball. There is a giant following, and they do get rowdy. I've been in there where I've seen personally where I was sitting right behind the bench watching the Clippers, and people get too far into it, and the guys on the bench had to turn around and maybe not go as far as this incident as last night, but, you know, there had to be something said. And so, you know, when you get paid, I understand they're human beings, and I, you know, and there's heat in the moment, and you get fired up. But, you know, even though they're right behind you, if you're getting paid that amount of money to play basketball, play basketball.
I agree with you.
So
I agree with you.
I understand people attack, and there's fans, and you're right. The fans in this country at times are downright embarrassing. And they get into it, and there's always usually, you know,
you can't take your
beer sales involved. Beer sales involved, yeah. And
you can't take your kid to a game. You can't. And that's, you know, and honestly,
other than, you know, the only one that's really fan friendly is baseball.
It is.
It really is. And that's the truth. Because I've been to all of them, and you're right. Baseball is a very family-oriented atmosphere compared to football is a disaster. Football game is an absolute nightmare.
Vinny, I'm sitting here watching this last night, and the first thing that crosses my mind is, what about the family sitting next to this Jazz fan who is being belligerent and disrespectful to Russell Westbrook? How about the family where there's two kids that are 10 and 11 years old?
And they got to listen to this.
And they have to listen to this. And the same thing with Russell Westbrook. I mean, come on. You can't tell me there weren't Thunder fans, there are kids there that saw this. And that's what I think of, because sports, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's fantastic. But ultimately, it's for family and friends, right? I mean, that's ultimately what it's for.
Yeah.
And they have taken that out. And a lot of it also has to do with ticket prices. Ticket prices are so high to get into arenas and stadiums today that when someone pays $60, they think they have the right to say whatever they want. And that's just not the case.
That's not the case. And that's part of it is they pay a lot of money to do this, and they think they have the right to say that. But again, you know, when you're a professional athlete, you've been doing this your whole life. And I don't know Russell Westbrook, and I'm not a huge basketball fan, but the fact of the matter is, you got a game going on in front of you. Play the game.
Focus on the game, especially
on the
big game.
If you can hear people behind you, then it's obvious that you're not focusing on the basketball game.
Right.
And I don't know what was said, and I'm sure it was not good. But for that amount of money, and you got 3 hours a night that you got to focus on, just focus on basketball.
Yeah.
And you're going to hear horrible things. That's part of the job.
Doesn't make it
visiting
right.
Yeah, it doesn't make it right.
But it's the truth.
When you're a visitor into a stadium, those fans are going to say things they shouldn't say.
But I will say this to Jazz fans. And again, it's not the entire fan base. I get this. You cannot generalize an entire group based on the actions of a few. But the Jazz fans have this reputation for a reason, because it is legit. Okay, I mean, legitimately, it is not a great place for a visiting fan to go to. It's not. All right. And I also think that A certain percentage of Jazz fans thrive on that.
Yeah, they do.
And so, to me, it's an unfortunate situation. But that fan is gone. He can't go to Jazz games anymore. And Russell Westbrook was
fine. And that's
good.
I applaud the Jazz for that.
I do too.
Because no matter right or wrong or indifferent, he said enough to cause that situation.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know what he said, but he said something.
Yeah.
And I don't believe Russell Westbrook just jumps around and tries to beat up a man and his wife for fun, for nothing.
not, well, let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. So right. I would assume that he doesn't do that. Right. So the Jazz fan, I'm glad that they get banned.
Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. New York will be at Indiana, 5 p.m. start time there. We get Cleveland at Philadelphia. L.A. will take on Chicago in the 6 o'clock hour. Also Milwaukee at New Orleans, San Antonio at Dallas. 8 o'clock hour tonight, Minnesota at Denver and Portland at the Clippers. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Local sports talk when we return. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And over the weekend, both the Carbon and Emory High School track and field squads opened up the season as they traveled to the Red Rock Invitational in Moab. The season could not have started better for the Carbon Lady Dinos, who walked away with the meet victory, scoring 200 points. In a distant second, it was Montezuma Cortez. They scored 149 points. Grand was in third with 107, followed by San Juan in fourth with 49, and Emory rounded out the top five with 32. In competition against eight squads, Carbon enjoyed first place finishes on the 100-meter hurdles from Megan Swayze. The senior completed the trek in 17.65 seconds. The Carbon 4x100 squad, consisting of McKenna Blank, Lindy Maurer, Harley McGlory, and Peyton Thomas, also took home first place. They finished the race in 54.47 seconds. Emma Christensen took home first place in the high jump with a 1.47 metric leap. And it was Mariana Molinar in the javelin. The junior threw a 33.27 metric throw. The Emory Lady Spartans were helped out by Mackenzie Cox, who finished second in the discus. In the high jump, it was Whitley Christensen. She finished with a final leap of 1.37 metrics, finishing behind Carbon's Haley Prescott and Emma Christensen. Again, the Emory Lady Spartans finished fifth with 32.5 points. On the boys' side of the track and field meet, it was Grand claiming first with 184 points, followed by Montezuma Cortez's 121. Carbon was in third with 109, followed by Emory in fourth at 93, and Monticello in fifth with 41. The Emory boys squad was led by Briar Macarello. He claimed a first-place finish in the 800 meters. Cale Allred finished first in the javelin, while the Spartans also claimed numerous second-place finishes. For the Carbon boys team, junior Carson Frame was first in the long jump. Valentino Rodriguez, Chris Matimba, Jacob Schuster, and Jaden Caro finished first in the 4x100. In the javelin, it was Michael Banaski who finished second. Both squads will continue the track and field season this weekend, and today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we will be joined by Carbon head coach Jim Jukes. We move over to soccer, and over the weekend, the Emory Spartans played three games in 3 days as they traveled to St. George. Emory finished 1-2, losing to Summit Academy by a final score of 2-0 and Desert Hills 4-0, but they picked up a win over Parowan 7-1. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by head coach Troy Winter. He said he saw a lot of positives from the team this past weekend.
It was really good. The weather has been, it's not been the best for us, as far as being able to get outside and work out. So cramming three games in basically 3 days taught us a lot about our team, the resilience that they've got. And we've got a fairly young team. So, there's some things that we've got to learn and, implement, here relatively quick as the season starts here in the end of this week. At the end of the weekend, I'm extremely proud, very excited for the season, the way things look for the team and for the boys.
The Emory soccer team will resume the non-region schedule today against Gunnison on the road. Start time for that contest is set for 4 p.m. The Carbon Dinos soccer team traveled on the road this past weekend. They opened up region play Thursday with an 8-0 loss to Providence Hall. And then on Friday and Saturday, they traveled to St. George, where they suffered a 4-0 loss to Skyview and a 3-1 loss to Canyon View. The Carbon soccer team will play host today to Mazer Prep. Start time for the contest is set for 3:30 p.m. And again, it will be the second region competition of the year for the Dinos, who currently hold a league record of 0-1. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We'll talk track and field here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Both Carbon and Emory opening up the 2019 track and field season over the weekend. You can get your complete recap of that meet by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about that, we have Carbon High School head coach Jimmy Jukes. Coach, pleasure. It's been far too long. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk track and field, Coach. And I know you guys had a great start to the 2019 season this past Saturday at the Red Rock Invitational in Moab. Lady Dinos pick up where they left off last year, Coach. A solid performance all the way around.
Yeah, we had a really good meet down there. You know, it's been a different track year this year with all the snow we've had, because it's been hard to get time on the track. We spent a lot of the first week just moving snow, and so we've only had about a week of, you know, a good solid practice. But even in that week, you know, we were limited with high jump, we're limited with our throws, we were limited with we didn't even long jump at all until the meet, and so we went down Saturday expecting it to be kind of a rough first meet.
Well, even with those expectations, Coach, there were some very positive things, and we can talk about, we'll start with the girls, and we'll talk about some of the first place finishes, and we'll begin with Megan Swayze, because this is a girl that you and I have talked a lot about, Coach, over the last couple of years, and well, she picks up a win in the 100-meter hurdles, and you can kind of talk a little bit about her performance.
Yeah, you know, Megan's been really solid for us, and I think last year, the end of the year didn't end quite the way she wanted it to. We got her in the state in the long jump, but she wasn't able to do as well in the hurdles as she would have liked, and she started the season off just amazing. To say she hadn't ran a full hurdle race until the meet says a lot. You know, I mean, she came out, ran a great time for the first hurdle race of the year, and really kind of sparked us a little bit doing that.
Were there any surprises for you, Coach, in the 4x100 with McKenna Blank and Lindy Maurer and Harley McGlory, Peyton Thomas? I mean, this is a pretty solid group. Did they surprise you at all in the 4x100?
No, I think we kind of thought we'd win that race. Those four girls are pretty solid girls. I mean, they work hard. We kind of, you know, Lindy's new to that group, and she's really stepped up big time for us. It's great when you get a freshman that can contribute right away, you know, and Peyton was that freshman and McKenna was that freshman last year. And now you add Lindy into that mix with that 4x1. It's a good solid effort from that 4x1 team, and I think that they're going to do some really big things this year.
I know you and I did talk about this last year as well, Coach. The field events, that it seems that Carbon continues to place a little bit higher in the field events than they have in the past over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. A couple of first place finishes there as well.
Right. You know, those first place finishes that we had were, I mean, they were great. You know, Mariana Molinar, she came out through the javelin 109. First meet of the year, qualifies for state. I can't be any happier with her than that. I mean, that was pretty awesome to see her do. And then you have, you know, you've got Emma Christensen came out, qualified in the high jump, won the high jump. Really didn't have much competition other than Haley from our own school, Haley Prescott, a freshman that looks like she's got some potential, and we're kind of excited about that as well. And you get a couple of those, and then on the boys' side, you know, you get you get a lot of good performances with that boys' team that's just amazing. Carson Frame goes out, wins the long jump, qualifies for state in the long jump as well. And so, you know, we had a couple of, I mean, we didn't have as many first-place finishes as we've had down there in the past, which really spoke to the depth of the team down there. We really did well with scoring in bunches. We totally dominated in some of the events that we had. Our boys team, the distance team, really rocked it as well.
You mentioned the depth, Coach, and we've been talking to Coach Allie Chamberlain of the Carbon Swim Team, and look, that's how they won the state championship. That's how the Lady Dinos won.
Right,
the, you know,
right.
So.
And it's funny because, you know, we're talking Megan Swayze. Megan Swayze was on that team, and with, you know, track and with swimming, that's how you win. Is you got to have depth. You got to have a lot of kids that can step up and help you out. And with our girls team, we scored in every single event that was across the board, and that's kind of how we got to that 200 threshold that we've never reached before.
Coach, what was the mindset for you as a coach going into this first meet? I mean, obviously you want to win the meet, but at the same time, that's not really the end all be all for the first meet of the season, is it?
No, we really went into this meet just wanting to know what we really had, because we didn't know. There's a lot of unknowns. We have a lot of young girls on our team, young freshmen on our team. We got a young group of boys as well. And so, you know, we had some things come up that, you know, unforeseen on the boys' side. You know, we didn't foresee that Derek Killam was going to end up having to have hip surgery, and we didn't, you know, and so losing a state champ and a kid of that caliber, you wonder who's going to step up, you know, who's going to step up for this team. You know, McCade Bradley's done a great job of leading this team from the throwing aspect and from the thrower side, and so this meet was all about just kind of getting a feel for where we were at. We really didn't expect to go down there and dominate the way we did.
Kim, we're being joined right now by Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbondano Track and Field Squad. Coach, if we look at the numbers, because I know over the past couple of seasons there have been some great numbers for Carbon, and right now Carbon is one of the bigger 3A schools. Against your expectations, how have the numbers looked for the team this year?
It's been interesting. The numbers are actually down on our team. Last year we were pushing 100. This year we're pushing 90. By all means, it's still a lot of kids, you know, that you have. And when I would see in that group of kids, we have a lot more athletes. We have a lot more that are top athletes this year. And so that helps a little bit when you get, you know, freshmen that can step in and help you out right away. But the numbers, I think, because of the weather and because of everything that's kind of gone on, it's been a little bit of an off, weird year because, you know, when you get snow on the ground, kids aren't ready to come out and run. They don't want to, you know, get it. Didn't feel like it was track season, you know. And so it kind of threw us off a little bit. But I feel like we're ahead of where we need to be. And you know, we're still not going to be that favored team, you know, to do anything in 3A because Juab's going to be there, Richfield's going to be there. But we like the underdog role, and we like that role of being the team that can sneak up on people and surprise some people.
So how difficult has the last couple of weeks been with the weather? I mean, we talked to baseball. They spent a lot of time in the gym. So how do you prep track and field? You can't throw a discus in the gym. So,
you can't throw a discus, javelin, or shot.
Right.
And there's just not enough room in the indoor facilities for the track team. And so we went down. We spent a lot of time down on the track with snow blowers, pushing snow with shovels. The whole team went down and helped us move. We finally have the track clear enough that we feel like we can get enough work in on what we have. We have a track meet at home next weekend, and so hopefully the warm weather comes around. But it has been very, very difficult at the start of the year to even get a full workout in a practice because, one, you're moving snow, and, two, it's cold, and so you're going to have, you know, pulled hamstrings and injuries and stuff like that. And we've got some kids that are a little bit, they're feeling it a little bit, but luckily we've been lucky so far not to have anything that's been catastrophic.
Well, it seems like the schedule, Coach, maybe starts off a little slow. So we had this meet this past Saturday at Moab. We have one coming up in Millard. And then on March 23rd, we have one at Carbon. And then after that Carbon Invitational, it seems like things really pick up where we're talking anywhere from two meets in one given week. It seems like that's kind of where the bulk of the season actually, I guess, goes into full swing.
Right, and it's a lot of fun when we get going, and it's always good to get that first meet under your belt, and it's even better when it's a win because the kids, they kind of get a sense of what track's about. You know, your new kids kind of have a good experience. The big thing with that first meet is getting the good experience for the kids so when you get into the bulk of the season where it's going to be harder competition, that they that they're already kind of sold and are on board with the track program. And so it'll be kind of fun to see what happens as the season progresses.
When you get a win from, say, the girls' side, does it motivate the guys maybe a little bit more as well?
It does. And the boys have really, that grand team down there, we're talking, they were one of the top finishers last year in 3A on the boys' side, and they're a good team. And then Montezuma Cortez is a big school from Colorado that really gave the only team that really came close to our girls. And their boys team was really good, too. You know, losing Derek hurt us a little bit. Losing Carter Fawcett hurt us. You know, we had some kids that graduated early that impacted what we were able to do. But that boys team, our distance program is just getting some miles under them. And Carson Frame is looking amazing right now. We've got some younger kids that are stepping up on that boys team. I wouldn't rule the boys out. I think that they're going to have something to say in this region. And they might have something to stay, you know, get in the way of state. Michael Banaski had a javelin throw that is gonna shake the javelin world in 3A a little bit because he improved by 19 feet, and that's a pretty large margin to be improving by.
Well, and I know you did mention long distance, but Jared Spendlove in the 800 meters as well. I mean, that's the second place finish. Those add up.
They do. And the thing is what you got to remember is we're going through that sick time of the year on the team, too, where we've got kids that have been out sick and running where they're not feeling so well. I know Ammon Wilson has been under the weather a little bit. Izzy has been sick a little bit. And so you're dealing with kids that are, you know, missing 3 or 4 days of practice and distance. And it really hurts you quite a bit to get back into the groove. And so once they're healthy, I mean, we could be really, really good.
Looking forward, Coach, to the results and a conversation following the meet this next Saturday. I'm sure you see a huge jump. At least you expect to see a huge jump from the first meet to the second meet.
Yeah, I think we'll see some big improvements, especially in our long jumps. Since we didn't long jump at all. The kids kept asking me, when are we going to long jump? And I said, long jump practice is going to be Saturday morning at 8 a.m. down in Moab. And so we did a crash course with a bunch of kids that hadn't long jumped. They still performed well, but we've actually got access to our long jump pit right now enough that we can do some stuff. So I expect some of those events. I think the throws, you're going to see some improvements. You know, these events that we could finally kind of work on, you're going to see improvements dramatically. We're going to do some shifts with a couple of our girls. We're going to move them into some different events as the season goes to help out with some areas. And so it's going to be interesting to see how we end up strategizing and placing people to help our chances for region and state title.
I'm definitely looking forward to it, Coach. Thank you again for the time. Can't wait to talk next week.
No, thank you, Jordan.
Always fun. That's Coach Jimmy Jukes again of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. We've got to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's Football Tuesday here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM, KOAL.
We're back for another segment here on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. Let's talk about the best remaining free agents. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about who's gone where, the price of some of these players. You and I have talked a little bit about that. But there's still some very talented vets out there that could help teams win right now, Vinny. I mean, the list is actually pretty big, pretty substantial.
There's a lot of players.
There is. So let's start right off the top. Safety, we knew, was going to be a deep position. We talked about this when the Ravens let go of Eric Weddle.
Yeah.
Right? You were going to have your options. If you wanted to spend a lot of money at the safety spot, you were going to have options. Okay, so Earl Thomas is still out there. Is he the best remaining free agent?
I would have to say so. And Earl Thomas...
Next to Le'Veon, I think it's probably 1A
and
1B.
Yeah, and, you know, Earl Thomas was pretty vocal. He wanted to be the top paid safety in the NFL.
It's not going to happen.
He's not even going to get close.
No.
He's going to find out what a lot of guys did last year with the safety market is it just kept getting worse. And now with Joyner and Vaccaro and Landon Collins, they've all signed. Tyrann Mathieu, he's not going to get close to what he wants.
Well, he's 30, and he's coming off a broken leg.
He's not going to get close to what he wants. So if you're looking for safety help, you know, Tommy Telesco in L.A., I know you're listening, wait. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, Trey Boston, Glover Quinn. I mean, the list is forever for safety, so wait.
Yeah, there's no reason to jump the gun. And to be honest, Trey Boston's still available.
Trey Boston was dynamite in L.A. 2 years ago, and he played solid last year. So, I mean, there's guys, Glover Quinn. I mean, just safety after safety on the board still. So that's a good one. What about Ndamukong Suh? What's a fit? I mean, you know him. You know, we talked about him all season last year for the Rams. Regular season average player.
Yeah, he's not an every down dominant.
But the playoffs, he was.
Well, he was. But how much of that... Okay, we were talking about Trent Brown and how the scheme just fit for Trent Brown, right? He got paid based off what the Patriots were able to do. They were able to take a right tackle who was a 7th-round draft pick, if I remember right. I believe he was a 7th-round pick. And they managed to turn him in to a pretty dominant left tackle. It worked.
Yeah.
He was dominant in there. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, he played well. He played well, but, you know, again, scheme fit.
Scheme fit. Now, this is my question with Ndamukong Suh, because the Rams threw a lot of different looks out come postseason. And don't forget, Suh, look, the Rams do not beat the Saints without Ndamukong Suh.
Oh, he was dominant.
In the second half, the way Wade Phillips moved him to the outside, he cracked Alvin Kamara the entire second half. Kamara had, I think, 10 catches in the first half, had one in the second half. And that was all based off Sue's play, if I remember correctly. And so Sue, he earned himself another paycheck. Where's his best fit? I would have said Cleveland before Trent Richardson. Maybe that's still an option.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, they kicked the tires on him again. I'm not just talking Chargers for fun. They kicked the tires on him coming out of Miami, too.
They did.
So maybe he's a rotational player in L.A. He's not going to get $14 million. I think the big money's mostly gone here. So now they wait and see.
Is it in his best option to try to work something out with Rams?
Yes.
You think so?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Don't know if this that's going to happen. I'm going to say that doesn't happen, but I agree.
Guy at the end of his career, he needs a high-end team. Belichick's a fit. Belichick likes versatile players. And for all the stuff people say about Ndamukong Suh on the field.
He's been great off the field.
Off the field, he's a wonderful human being.
He is.
Yeah, he gets after on the field, and he pushes the limit. But hey, this isn't a problem player. So Belichick's a fit. The Chargers are a fit. The Rams are a fit.
The Vikings could be a fit.
Zimmer could be a fit.
Problem with the Vikings is they do not have a lot of cap space. In fact, after making that deal,
they don't have
Anthony
anything
anymore. They really don't.
They don't
They're
anything
down to like $8 million.
Yeah, they
so
don't have anything.
In
what about
that
Buffalo?
Regard,
that's a sleeper team because they have money.
Okay, but what
that
is Sue,
defense
what
is on
looking
the rise.
For? What is Sue looking for? Because there was the conversation. Remember last year we had to see the whole thing about him and Warren Buffett, and it's still a pretty, I guess, it's just an odd couple. So you still
right
hear about it a lot. The one-year deal in L.A., was it about trying to make a run for a Super Bowl, or was it, I'm betting on myself for one more massive payday?
I think it was the Super Bowl because he's not going to get the massive payday.
He may from a team like Buffalo.
It's going to be a short-term deal, though. You know that.
2 to 3 years.
It's going to be a short-term deal. And
but
even
a lot of these contracts
that we see as long-term deals, people overspend on purpose because they have to spend money. You know, your four-year deals on average nowadays are two-year deals.
Mm-hmm.
Your six-year deals are three-year deals. And they save money releasing you later on.
So let me throw some teams out there as far as Sue goes that have the most money to spend. And you tell me yay or nay. Indianapolis.
Yay.
Okay. Jets.
Nay.
Cleveland.
Nay.
Houston.
Yay.
They have $59 million.
Yeah, yay.
I think they have $59 million still. San Francisco at $54 million.
Nay.
Oakland at 45.
Nay.
Buffalo at 45.
Yeah, that's a different one. If they overpaid, yay.
I'm going to throw one out there to you that I like. I like Tennessee.
Yeah, yay. That's a yay.
And
that's
Tennessee,
a good, solid,
they have $39 million, I believe,
yeah,
in cap space. You went out and you got Saffold, and they needed Saffold.
They needed Saffold.
There was a game in which Mariota was sacked 11 times.
Yeah, they needed Saffold.
They needed him.
And they needed some healthy players, too. I mean, Conklin got hurt last year, if I remember correctly. Luan, I believe how you say it. He was on one leg for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a nice fit. And Indy's an interesting, again, they got to spend money.
I'm waiting. I'm just waiting. It hasn't happened yet, but
they
waiting.
They have to spend money, so that would be an interesting fit.
Let's move on from Ndamukong Suh. Justin Houston is still available. And as far as edge defenders go, we know there's a need for him in the NFL. He's, to me, I view this guy...
He's a bullpen player now.
He's a step below Ndamukong. I don't believe that Ndamukong Suh is an every down dominant defensive player anymore. I really don't.
I don't think Justin Houston is.
I don't either.
Not at all. Injury history.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, as a backup playing on third downs, what if he's 15 snaps a game? But if you're only going to play 15 snaps a game, you're not going to get any money.
Well, he made at this stage in his career, he has to know that.
Yeah.
Right. He has to know.
And he
got
a big payday from Kansas City.
He did.
He's made his money.
He did.
There's another one. Indy. 1 year.
Yeah, Indy's going to be on everyone that
we
mentioned.
True.
Indy's
going to
be in
but
because
these
have
are
so
needs
much money.
They have.
Sure.
Pass
I
rush
agree
is one of their biggest issues, is pass rush.
Golden Tate.
That's an interesting, a versatile player, still in good shape, relatively injury free his whole career.
He's a complimentary piece.
And yeah,
so,
he is.
So
he'd be
look,
a nice.
Look around and
I think he would. It'd be good for him to re-sign in Philly.
Yeah, I don't know if that's possible now, though. I mean, again, just taking a look at the dollar amount that's available, because they went out and they got Malik Jackson, which I loved. They went out and they got DeSean Jackson.
Yeah.
Philly has spent a lot of money.
Philly's
and
spent a lot of money.
You know, Nelson Aguilar may actually be the odd man out in Philly.
And would you take him or Golden Tate?
I would rather have Golden Tate. If I'm picking, because one of the things that I know about Golden Tate, he's a consistent performer.
That is true. And Aguilar's had some injury issues to add to it. So, how about Pittsburgh?
For Golden Tate?
Yeah.
Well, Big Ben needs some options.
He needs some options.
And let me tell you how much I believe this would help someone like Juju. Golden Tate has broken 58 tackles over the past 3 years. That is more than any receiver in the NFL.
And that's
so
a huge
I like
deal.
Pittsburgh. I like that.
That's
I like
a good
that.
Fit.
It is a good
it
fit.
It helps. And he's a good person off the field, which Pittsburgh needs a few more of those. Let's just be honest with what they went through the last 2 years. Find quality people.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh, if you're listening, hey, Kevin Colbert, if there's any way you're on the air, and find quality people.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's
so I like that one. Pittsburgh's an interesting fit.
I
was wondering about Buffalo, but we've kind of seen them, you know, do that already. We've seen they've spent their money, they've made their moves.
I like John Brown.
I love John Brown and the Beasley thing.
And Cole Beasley's not bad.
Before those moves, I was thinking Golden Tate might be a guy that could slide.
But let
in
me
there.
Ask you this: if Beasley gets 9, what does Golden Tate get?
He's a younger. Yeah, he's got to get 9,
and that makes it difficult. Right? That makes it difficult.
Yeah, it makes it difficult for some players. Indy again. Indy, you know, we keep talking about Indy, but really, receiver and pass rush are the two biggest things they need, right? We can agree on that.
Sure.
So all these free agents that are kind of left, they fit into that mold. So Indy, again, a lot of money, and they need defensive front help and at receiver. So that throws in Golden Tate, Tyrell Williams, which I already thought had been done by now. I'm shocked it's not.
Yeah, me too.
No, I'm shocked.
Me too.
Because I don't know what you do with Devin Funchess.
Let me throw another name out there. We'll go back to the defensive side of the ball. Ziggy Ansah is still available. And now the problem with Ziggy is that this guy has not had, I don't think he's had 50 pressures in about 3 years. Injuries have played a big factor for Ziggy.
He was dominant for one season.
He was.
And he was an average player the rest of his career. So what are you getting?
I can tell you where I think he fits in. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong. New Orleans is where he fits in.
Yeah, that might be. But he's another one. He had his big payday. He got his franchise tag.
He
didn't earn his money. He's not getting it again.
So
I don't see him getting a big payday.
Okay, so then New Orleans, Minnesota, the Rams,
Miami,
the Patriots. I'm throwing the four teams out that we look at right now. And I guess I throw Minnesota out because they don't have a lot of money. Right? And so now you're on the look for veterans that you can get at a cheaper price, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, throw some of those teams out there. Carolina wouldn't be a bad fit.
I love your Belichick call there. Belichick loves athletes.
Look what he did with Van Noy, another former Lion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he loves scrap heap players that people have given up on. And Ansah has the ability in him. And of course, Bill Belichick makes a phone call to his protege and gets an honest report from Matty P.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that insight to say, hey, will he fit?
I'll throw one more out there for you. Jared Cook. 32 years old, lost a step a little bit.
But you'd given up on him, and last year he was dynamite.
Well, he was basically it.
He was it.
For Derek Carr.
He was it, so he played good. If I'm Oakland, call him back.
Well, why not?
Why not? Right? Call him back. You need weapons.
There's obviously good chemistry between him and Carr as well.
Yes.
And that matters.
That matters. New Orleans is one.
Yeah, they need a tight end.
They need a tight end. That's a good fit. Here's another one. A scrap heap player that just kind of comes around. Bill Belichick again. You know, we don't know. You know, there's still this report. The agent threw it right out. We don't know if Gronkowski's coming back.
Well, Jared Cook would definitely do wonders with Tom Brady.
He did wonders
with Derek Carr.
He can still play.
And New England,
they have money too.
But they have money. I'm the first to admit I was surprised at the production out of Oakland
because
once he went to Green Bay, I thought this is the end of Jared Cook. Right, this was the end. We saw what he could do in Tennessee. We saw what he could do in St. Louis. To me, I thought it was the end in Green Bay. So he did surprise me quite a bit in Oakland.
Yeah, he did. So I think New England's a perfect fit there.
New England's a perfect fit for a lot of guys, though, aren't they?
No. They're so scheme specific and so.
So HaHa Clinton Dix is not a fit in New England.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't. That's an interesting fit in. I thought that would be an interesting fit in LA for both the Rams and Chargers. Again, Weddle's taken the Rams out of that, but
yeah,
safety was a big need for both. Again, the safety market's going to be just wait and see.
Yeah, there's no reason.
No reason to rush. No.
The legal tampering period needs to be used for marquee free agents and massive needs. That's what the legal tampering period is for.
Correct. And at that point, you reassess everything. Here's our money. We're now into our pro days. We have our roster draft. And then the second wave comes on.
Yeah.
So it's really neat. This is an exciting time.
It's fun.
Like we said last week, I mean, the 2018 season's over. But it's just begun now. 2019 has just begun. So the combine, free agency, now we're going to go to the draft. And it's going to be very interesting. And we were wrong in some respect. We kept talking about, especially me, saying that Antonio Brown was going to really affect the NFL draft. We were wrong.
Yeah.
They gave him away for nothing. Yeah, we were completely wrong.
It would have if the Buffalo deal would have went through. Yeah, it may have. Yeah.
Yeah, Buffalo, that deal would have changed the NFL draft. And again, yeah, he was Antonio Brown. So we basically, and you know what? Do we have time?
Quickly.
How bad do you have to be that they would eat $20 million and give you away for 3rd and 5?
The entire situation.
I mean, how bad is that?
It's not just Antonio Brown. It's the entire situation in the entire 2 years. Seriously. I mean, we're talking about 700 days.
They gave him away.
Because at what point is it just, look, Le'Veon's gone. Let's get Antonio out of here. And let's see what we got. I mean, really, that's kind of the route that they went.
Yeah,
and I don't blame them.
A third and a fifth?
Yeah.
That's just giving a guy away.
Got nothing for him. We are out of time. Sometimes an hour just is not enough.
That's true.
It's always fun to get you in. Next Tuesday, we're going to have plenty to talk about because the dust will be settled by next Tuesday. So that's going to do it for us. This is Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. We are out.